minutes after 8 o'clock. Welcome to Morning Magazine for Friday, March 4th of 2022. I am your host, Rosanna Longo-Better. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up after headlines, a mobile home bilingual screening park tour is trying to show storytelling as a tool of social change. Then, a documentary about a local naturalist legend debuts today at Boulder International Film Festival. After that, on the Nature Almanac, we tag along with a team of naturalists in search of great hornet owl moms who are on the nest right now with chicks ready to hatch. Finally, we have our regular segment from .org. At 8:30, Connections will come your way. Kathy Patridge will speak with renters after the fire. Guests include Anne Marie Jensen, Director of East County Housing Opportunities Coalition. Then at 9:30, we will bring you 2.5 hours of eclectic music with the Morning Sound Alternative. That's all still ahead, but first, these local regional headlines with KGNU's Stacey Johnson.
The United States Department of Justice is asserting Colorado is violating Title II of the Americans with Disabilities Act by unnecessarily segregating individuals with physical disabilities in nursing homes. The ADA law requires public entities to administer services to individuals with disabilities in the most integrated and least restrictive setting appropriate to their needs. Colorado administers services to people with disabilities under the state's Medicaid program. After receiving several complaints about the state's long-term care system under Medicaid, the Department of Justice opened an investigation in November 2018 and revealed their findings in a 15-page letter to Governor Polis yesterday. According to the Department of Justice, unnecessary institutionalization is common in Colorado despite several programs that help adults with physical disabilities remain in or transition back to their own homes and communities. The Department of Justice is next requiring Colorado to enter into voluntary compliance negotiations. If negotiations are unsuccessful, the Department of Justice said it may take action, including a lawsuit, to remedy outstanding concerns. A former Loveland police officer who first joked about the rough arrest of a 73-year-old woman is now pleading guilty. KGNU's Jack Armstrong has more.
Facing up to 8 years in prison, former police officer Austin Hopp is pleading guilty to violent detaining of a 73-year-old woman with dementia. Body cam footage showed Hopp arresting Karen Gardner in 2020, after Gardner had left a Loveland store without paying for items that amounted to less than $20. Hopp proceeded to push Gardner against the hood of his police vehicle after the arrest took place. Still backed against the car, Garner's bent arm was pushed near her head as Hopp warned, "Are you finished? Are you finished? We don't play this game." Last year, Garner's family received a settlement from the city of Loveland for her dislocated shoulder. Garner's daughter-in-law is advocating against the plea, arguing that their case has sufficient evidence that would not require a plea deal. Assistant District Attorney Matthew Molero stresses that Garner's case has a sufficient evidence for prosecution, but there are other factors that go into consideration of a plea deal. Molero stresses that just because the plea deal is put in place does not mean that they're undermining justice in Garner's case. Hopp faces multiple criminal charges without a plea deal as he awaits a sentence in May. For KGNU, I'm Jack Armstrong.
Denver Auditor Timothy O'Brien has sued the Denver City Council this week in opposition to a bill amendment that limits the subpoena powers of his office. The amendment, passed last year, grants record holders of city agencies and city contractors to keep confidential and/or proprietary records on-site for audit review instead of handing them over to the auditor's office for off-site review. O'Brien argues in his lawsuit the amendment goes against best practices for government audits and violates the city charter. According to the Denver Post, Council President Stacey Gilmore has already filed for an ordinance that would repeat the subpoena powers section of the municipal code, as council leaders say it will be cheaper to start over than hammering out differences in court. The repeal is up for first reading at Monday's City Council meeting. O'Brien is also clashing with City Council members over procedures for an audit covering City Council operations. O'Brien told the Denver Post the audit still has not happened, as council leaders are insisting staff will only be available for interviews if a senior staffer or an attorney is present. The March 2nd State Health Department report covering new COVID-19 outbreaks shows oddities for Boulder County, as more than half of the outbreaks considered recent come from K-12 schools or childcare centers in the county. In addition, a majority of the Boulder County school and childcare center outbreaks refer to the date February 17th. A spokesperson for Boulder County Public Health told the Denver Westword that many of the outbreaks actually date back further to early January. The spokesperson insisted the outbreaks listed are not current, even though they remain under the active investigation of the State Health Department. From the new outbreak listings, more than 1,000 staff and attendees to Boulder County K-12 schools and child care centers tested positive for the virus. According to the Denver Westword, Boulder County Public Health offered no explanation for why it took so long for the outbreaks to show up on the State Health Department roster. By a vote of 3-1, the Boulder Beverage Licensing Authority has denied a liquor license for Driftwood, a new restaurant at the Boulder Reservoir. After hearing 12 hours of testimony, the licensing authority made the decision in the early hours yesterday. According to the Daily Camera, neighbors within the vicinity of the reservoir spoke out against the license by expressing that they have no need or desire for a restaurant that serves alcohol and is allowed to host events. Today's weather along the upper metro front range includes mostly cloudy skies with highs in the 60s. Tonight, rain is likely during the overnight hours with lows in the 30s. The current temperature in Boulder is 34 degrees. For KGNU, I'm Stacy Johnson.
Sarah Terry, director of A Decent Home, a documentary about mobile home parks, speaks with me about her film that is a moving film that's going to go visit different mobile home parks.
One of my first goals with the film was to change the stereotypes that people have. You know, in America, you can still say trailer trash. You know, slang words for different minority groups or majority groups is you can't say those anymore. And I think that's right, but you can still say trailer trash and nobody will criticize you. So we criticize people who live in mobile home parks and we criticize this type of housing, which actually 20 million Americans live in a mobile home. They're affordable. I think there's a lot, they're an answer to the affordable housing crisis. So my first desire was to create a picture, introduce you to people that would change the stereotypes. And so I was very fortunate. You know, sometimes it took a while to get to know people in a park. I had to find an introduction or, you know, but 9 to 5 in Aurora in Denver is how I met the residents of Denver Meadows. And people were so welcoming and so kind. You know, they would Hilda and Lalo, who are in the film, they'd say, well, we won't be home until 5 o'clock, but you can go in, you know. Every time I was there, Lalo wanted to cook for me. You know, and this happened in other parks too. I just found I want us to understand the answers that people have who live in mobile home parks. The film asks the question, how much is enough? Because I think quite often the wealthy don't know the answer to that question. It's more cars, more houses. And I don't mean everybody, and I don't mind if you have money. I'm not, you know, it's not a critique of people who have money. It's a critique of greed that the film is about. And I think people who live in mobile home parks know how much enough is. One home, a safe family, a place to live. They can't always afford it. Sometimes they're working 3 and 4 jobs just to, you know, to pay for that space, but they know how much enough is. And I think that we have a lot to learn from those values and that sense of community. In this clip, this is the first time in the film where you meet Hilda and Lalo, who are among the 100 families who lived at Denver Meadows, which is in Aurora. Denver Meadows was primarily a Hispanic community, a Spanish-speaking mobile home park community. And Hilda and Lalo became sort of a center for the activism around trying to save the park. They would have community meetings in their homes. But in this moment, this is a scene where you first meet them and you come into their house and you might hear the sounds of Lalo cracking eggs. He's cooking like he always does. And you might hear a bird in the background. That's Guapo, you know, Hilda's favorite parrot. So I'll just play this little clip and you'll hear them talk a little bit about living in this home.
Cuando agarramos esta casa, Lalo y yo éramos homeless.
Tuvimos como 3 meses viviendo en el carro, en la troca, en hoteles, como podíamos. Nosotros queríamos un hogar. Y lo obtuvimos.
And that's just a little clip that introduces you to their home, and we're going to revisit them several times in the film. But I, as you just heard, they were homeless at one point. You know, they lived in their truck, and here was this place they could afford. It's their American dream. It's home.
You're shedding light on this phrase that is so common here, the American dream, and the reality of people that are working really hard only can afford a mobile home.
Well, Colorado also, it's an important form of affordable housing stock everywhere, but particularly in Colorado. The residents of Denver Meadows fought 3 years to try to save the park. They tried to buy the park from the owner, who refused a $20 million offer that would have allowed the residents to buy the park with the help of a nonprofit and run it themselves and be able to have affordable housing, you know, forever. But because of that fight, Colorado, which had almost no protections for mobile home park residents, which is typical around the United States. But Colorado now has laws, some fairly good laws, to protect mobile home park residents and to help give them the right to buy a park. And that's because of the fight to save Denver Meadows. And you have laws that need to be revised. There's still activism going on about that. But because you have many parks, you've had 3 or 4 parks recently where the residents have been able to buy their parks with the help of nonprofits. There are many other parks that are being threatened. There were 78 parks that were just bought by a private equity firm last year. So we are taking the film, in addition to this, the virtual screening on Sunday is for people who live in parks to get a chance to see the film and to find out would they like us to come to their park. The Colorado Health Foundation is supporting our outreach work, and we are going to do, we call it a mobile home park screening tour of about 12 parks all over the state, where we'll bring the film into a park. We have the screen and the projector, and residents can invite people from the community to come in, or they can use it as an organizing tool in their own community. But we want to help them see the effect of storytelling as a tool for social change. So we'll be doing that with the film, and that's part of why people are being invited on Sunday, you know, is to find out, would they like to show this film? Do they think they can do something? And we've made a special version of the film, again, with the help of Colorado Health Foundation, which is Spanish language captions. As you noted, it's bilingual. Hablo un poquito de español, pero es muy malo. I could communicate in the film with Hilda and Lalo, but I encourage them to speak in Spanish. There's English captions for English speakers, but now we have the whole film with Spanish captions. There are many Spanish-speaking residents in Colorado who live in mobile homes, and we'll have a film that they can understand.
I have been speaking with Sarah Terry. She's the director of A Decent Home, a documentary about mobile home parks and the wealth gap, which premiered at the Denver Film Festival last November. It is coming to screen around the state, including this Sunday, March 6th, online, thanks to the advocacy of 9to5. The Boulder International Film Festival is underway with a packed program. Among them is the homegrown documentary Mighty Oak, which profiles the life of Oak Thorne, founder of the Thorne Nature Center. KGNU's volunteer Elena Claver spoke with the film's director, Pamela Hogue.
Pam Hogue is a filmmaker who was born and raised in Boulder, and she's living out of state, but she's recently made a documentary called Mighty Oak about Oak Thorne, and it will be showing at the Boulder International Film Festival. So welcome, Pam, and tell us about why you decided to make this about Oak.
Hi, thanks, Elena, for having me. It's very exciting. Finally, it's a project that's been a long time in the making. And we started thinking about it in 2014, finally started working on it 2017, maybe. So Oak is someone that I've known since I was 16 years old. I met him because I was a friend of one of his daughters, and I was interested in film. And he was running a film company at the time. And so I have encountered him and known him all through the years. He was quite an environmentalist, and I have been an environmental activist my whole adult life. And he worked on some projects when I was working at Channel 12, KBDI. He helped us with the celebration of Earth Day in 1990, I believe. And just kept an ongoing relationship with him. He got to know my daughters. He's a spectacular human being. And I felt like the world needs to know heroes like him, because we're just inundated with these false heroes, these false superheroes. The person who's going to save us or save the planet is going to be us helping them along, but it's going to be people who are real people, who know how to make things happen and who care deeply and are passionate and are unrelenting. And Oak has such a nice way about him. He perseveres. He's persistent. He is so respectful. He acts the same to a six-year-old as he does to a U.S. senator. You really wouldn't know the difference if you didn't know who he was talking to, because he's so respectful to everyone. So I find that inspirational. And when I came up with the name Mighty Oak, I was thinking, what would Marvel Studios call a superhero like Oak? And they say, oh, Mighty Oak, but he's really the superhero. It's not going to be someone with super magical powers or someone with big bulgy muscles. It's going to be someone like him.
It's so interesting. I didn't know that he had been involved with film. I just know him as a naturalist ecologist and a bird bander. He's been bird banding for so long that he's got some crazy low number for his identification, because I think he's been doing it since he was a teenager.
I know, and there's so much more to his efforts. He was one of the few people who helped get past the open space tax in Boulder. And it was like a model to the rest of the country. He really designed and came up with the idea of environmental impact statements before the EPA initiated that. He had some samples of that were his efforts. And he started this Thorn Educational Film Company that was doing extraordinarily well and had some unfortunate mishaps happen funding-wise. But that's how I first met him. I went to his studio where he was making these films.
Well, Pam Hogue, speaking of films, because this is going to be showing at the Boulder International Film Festival, if people somehow miss it, how else might they be able to see it, plus any other films that you've done?
Well, I don't have very many posted on my website. It's studiosozo.com. I'm in the middle of trying to revive it. Something happened to it. It crashed and it got hacked. Can you believe that? Who would bother? But anyway, it got really messed up. And this film, Mighty Oak, you can see it virtually through March 17th through BIFF, Boulder International Film Festival. And thereafter, I'm submitting it to some other film festivals. So you can't really make it too accessible while you're doing that. But it will be online. It will be on YouTube eventually. And hopefully we'll get it distributed.
Well, thank you so much, Pam Hogue, and I hope that people can see this documentary, Mighty Oak, either at the film festival or at the delayed film festival or afterwards.
Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you.
That was news volunteer Elena Claver speaking with Pam Hogue. Her documentary, Mighty Oak, debuts today at 12:30 p.m. at the Grace Commons Church as part of the Boulder International Film Festival. Now we go to our nature almanac. Great horned owl moms are on the nest right now with chicks ready to hatch. Naturalists Scott Severs and Ruth Carol Cushman take their scoops and binoculars along so that they can watch the owls from a distance that respects the nesting owl's need for safety in the nesting season.
It's March. What's happening in the natural world? Here are Boulder naturalists Scott Severs and Ruth Carol Cushman.
We're out just at sunrise looking for great horned owls. These are crepuscular birds, which means that they're most active at dawn and dusk. So it's just the perfect time to go out looking, and also it's the perfect time because this is their nesting season. They start courting even in November and December, and it's just about time for the chicks to be hatching now.
I've got a scope on a great horned owl nest. I'm trying to tune it in to see if we can see the female who does all the incubating. on her nest.
We're not going to really pinpoint exactly where this nest is, protect the owls.
I'm having a very difficult time seeing a female in here. Either she's very hidden, which is a great thing for great horned owls. They're the color of bark and the trees, so they can blend in. Or she's not in the nest anymore. So
she might be out hunting, too.
She could be, mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, that's true.
If you're out looking for owls, they usually are high up in a tree. They don't build their own nest. They take over other people's nests. So they will take over a hawk nest or a magpie nest. But they're lazy. They don't like to build their own nest.
This is inconclusive, this nest. It did have some activity earlier in the season and an incubating female. One of my colleagues actually saw it being harassed by a bald eagle. The owl was flared out and puffed its wings up. So I'm deliberately kind of setting us up behind a tree so that she doesn't have full view of us. But she is in the nest, so sometimes you have to move around to get a different angle. We're still a sufficient distance away, maybe 100 to 150 meters from the nest.
I'm having trouble seeing her. Oh, yes, I do see her. She's sitting quite low in the nest. And it's amazing that such a huge bird as an owl can just disappear. She's the same color and texture as the background. And you can be looking right at an owl and not see her. And then suddenly she materializes, and there she is. One thing I love about owls is their sound.
Those are the collared doves.
Collared doves.
Which have a similar sound. Yeah.
A collared dove would be a nice meaty meal for an owl.
I'm sure you've had a few. She's looking right at us. Yeah. Their eyes, when they're wide open, are yellow iris with a dark pupil, but they can close their eyes way down so that they're just little slits, and they might look like they're sleeping, but they can have their eyes just barely open and they're watching you. So their face is very round, and if you happen to catch them hooting and you're in the good light, that white throat puffs up as they're going, or, "Who's awake? Me too. Who's awake? Me too." If you were to put it to words.
And I love to watch them when they're doing that because they sort of bend over a little bit and puff up their rump.
Out. They almost look like a chicken crowing. They really throw their head forward as they're hooting. As we get toward dusk, she'll awaken and she'll call to her mate and look for a prey delivery, probably, from her mate. It's really important to observe any nesting birds from a distance, either with spotting scopes or binoculars. Owls, especially if they're staring at you, they're perceiving you as a threat. So you want to observe from a good distance.
Scott Sievers and Ruth Carol Cushman are friends and Boulder naturalists.
Now we go to .org.
Welcome to .org, KGNU's weekly look at local nonprofits.
Startup Colorado was founded out of CU School of Law in 2011 by Colorado Attorney General Phil Weiser and Brad Feld. Executive Director Delaney Keating.
We work in two ways. Startup Colorado is interested in the health of the entrepreneurial ecosystem across Colorado. And that way we work with a lot of community leaders and community organizations and business support organizations on the ground. And that can look like an economic development office. That can look like a business support organization, like a small business development center office, a chamber of commerce, you name it. And so we'll support the health of the ecosystem by supporting the outreach for their event, by providing sponsorship dollars for initiatives you're getting off the ground at home, and then giving them the additional capacity support, which works on building easier access to all the resources and connecting entrepreneurs not only to each other, but to the right experts to help entrepreneurs get quick answers, get access to resources and assets, provide direct scholarships for entrepreneurs. The wall will provide sponsorship for those community organizations and community leaders. Entrepreneurs and have greater awareness of each other, what each other's doing, what each other has to share, what's of value to each other.
Who makes up the members of your group?
Inside the network are entrepreneurs, business support organizations, funders, mentors. So if we set the table for conversation, funders can find entrepreneurs and entrepreneurs can find funders. We host different types of virtual events and we continue to help people find each other that way. Also on the network, you can get in there and search for things. An entrepreneur can get in and search for funders and go through the archive of funders across the state who are participating in the network. We have resources available to businesses across Colorado, and the majority of them are managed through the Office of Economic Development and International Trade. By them participating in the network, we can extend their reach and connections into the playing field, whether that's an advanced industry tax incentive or the Rural Jumpstart Program. It can open up more doors for entrepreneurs, but can also decrease the amount of doors an entrepreneur has to get through to get to the right resource.
You also put together a podcast.
It became important to us to have Rural tell its own story and to really tell it from its own voice. And the best way to do that was through the podcast, to really put the mic to the entrepreneurs and the community leaders, put the mic to the community, and have them tell their stories.
I'm Steve Miller for KGNU.
You've been listening to .org, KGNU's weekly look at local nonprofits. For more .orgs or for more information on this episode, visit news.kgnu.org.
That's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. I have been your host, Rosanna Longo-Vetter. Special thanks to Stacy Johnson, Jack Armstrong, Scott Severs, Ruth Carol Cushman, Steve Miller, Alexis Kenyon, and Emma Martinez for their contributions to today's program. Stay tuned for Connections, coming right away.